Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing very well.
Good.
And like to talk this morning a little bit about a hearing that was held on Tuesday in the Senate Intel Committee.
Mm-hmm.
They were going over a report from the Director of National Intelligence. Coates brought this out and they did the research. But it's been advertised. It really came out. The news came out today about, the war between the Intel community and Donald Trump. And figuring out all the players is not as easy because there are several factions involved, and there's no neat little group that takes this position. It's not like the interventionists over here, the non-interventionists are here, and the media is over here reporting objectively. They're all playing a role in it.
Yeah.
But basically, the media is what really caught my attention was, boy, this is a war. Trump's war with the intelligence community is out in the open. It continues. It's part of the, Russiagate and all these things. So they really wanted to build this up. But there was also a lot of definite positions that they're taking and the neocons are taking and they're supporting. So this report, I found it interesting because even though it's taking on Trump, they really conceded some things, like they disagree with Trump's future policy in North Korea and don't trust him, but they haven't violated the token agreement they have. They haven't been working on exploding nukes and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim that as bad as Trump says that the Iranians are, that they haven't violated their treaty either. So there are some things in there that if you listen to only the snippets in there that shows that they're moving in our direction a little bit, they could be used. But that isn't their goal. Their goal is to, I think, one of the major goals is just to take on Trump. Whether he's right or wrong seems to be almost irrelevant as far as if we can discredit Trump. And that seems to be the big thing. But because his policy is not, a consistent policy, we have to sort of dance around it and analyze and figure out, what we can support. Because he argued the case that ISIS was done and let's get out of North Korea. This group in this committee and all, they get hysterical over this. And but their position is that they admit he's right. The ISIS has been greatly reduced, but you can't tell. They're going to come back in the same way. If we leave Afghanistan, they're going to come back in. And this is their argument, always promoting their interventionist policy. And in the midst of all this, it's a war between the intelligence community and with Trump himself. And then the media is out there, analyzing it, and they're further confusing the whole situation.
Exactly. If there's ever an example of out-of-control bureaucracy, it would be the Office of the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence. And if you remember, this came about in 2004, and you remember it well, in the frenzy after 9/11 still, the frenzy of the Gulf, of the Second Iraq War, and, of course, the idea, this four-letter word called reform. Reform always means more. It always means the opposite. And so in 2004, piece of legislation passed that created the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. The goal was to coordinate all the intelligence agencies under one umbrella, which is actually what you don't want in intelligence. You want sort of competing factions. And if you remember in the run-up to the Iraq War, all of the other offices of intelligence, all the other parts of the intelligence community were on board with the neocons. There was one faction that was the State Department's Intelligence and Research and said, no, we're taking a footnote out of this. So that you have that competition, which is good. You crush it with this reform. And so you have Dan Coats coming down to the Senate, playing footsie with the neocons, undermining everything, really, and making the case for more intelligence, for more intelligence control of America. We can talk about it later, media, social media, etc. So really, this is the product of reform more than anything else.
Now, I served in the Congress with Dan Coats and know him and on a personal basis. Friendly person,
Sure,
but he came across as somebody that didn't have strong beliefs. Even then, there was a little bit of this neocon stuff going around, but I didn't identify him that way. I didn't identify him with strong convictions, and yet I identified him more with a good follower of orders. And I think, you know, in order to bring it all together with the director of national intelligence, he might be the perfect person for this job from their viewpoint, but not from our viewpoint and the American population viewpoint to get the right information.
Exactly. Now, we dig a little bit into the testimony of Coates and the others. There was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, et cetera, there. But one of the things that struck me first, Dr. Paul, is, you know, once again, there's no mention of the war on terror. That was the defining characteristic of U.S. foreign policy for what, at least a decade or more, 15 years or so. That's all gone. It's washed away. There's a new slogan in town to justify the continued spending in the national security state. And this is what Coates says: Russia and China pose the biggest risks to the United States. They're more aligned than they have been in decades.
Right. And another thing that they did not mention there, I don't think they did, I didn't read every single word of it, but it certainly hasn't been discussed, is the danger of what's going on in the South China Sea. You know, yeah. That might be one of the most dangerous spots in the world, because China's not going to be pushed around. And we're over there, you know, getting in their neighborhood, busing their ships and testing, you know, the international boundaries, and just looking for an accident to happen or a false flag to happen. But I didn't see much discussion there. It seems like something like that could have been objectively analyzed, and in context of non-intervention and context of our national security and our defense, you know, and give a position on it. But I don't think they're engaged in this. They're engaged in this fight between how do we get rid of Trump, because that's what they seem to be concentrating on. Anybody that's not in his ranks, and even the people in his ranks, you don't know who are his friends and who aren't his friends. But this is a mess that they have, and I think this whole report demonstrates the chaotic situation that's there in trying to figure out what the foreign policy is.
Exactly. Once again, pointing out the hypocrisy: U.S. sending naval vessels through the South China Sea challenge the Chinese in their own backyard, but everyone freaks out when the Russians land a jet on an island off of Venezuela. How dare they come into our neighborhood?
Yeah. You know?
So once again, but why, we have to ask ourselves, maybe they're right. Maybe Russia and China are closer together than they have been. You know, they've always had some tension between the two countries. Then you ask yourself, well, why is that? Why are they getting closer? Well, it's U.S. foreign policy pushing them into each other's arms, feeling the need to resist encroachment in the South China Sea, the U.S. coup in Ukraine, which has put hostile troops on the border with Russia. So this intelligence community is sort of a self-perpetuating threat machine. You know, they create these threats, they continue these threats to justify bigger budgets and more control.
You know, there is a statement and a quote in here actually about our allies and our partners. Some are, you know, wanting to become more independent, which maybe you and I would say, it's not a bad idea. You take care of your business and we'll take care of ours. But that was used, I assume, in this report as being a negative. You know, that how are we going to run our empire if we have people becoming more independent? And that was in there to needle Trump as well.
Yeah, how dare he question NATO and all these other things. The other thing that was interesting is about the elections and interference. And there was you know, of course, Coates claimed, we protected you guys in 2018 elections. You're safe. We got you. You're back. But you better watch out for 2020. There's going to be all new kinds of attacks. You know, and I sort of made myself a note. Translation: If my boss wins again, blame Putin. You know, that's essentially what he's saying. That, you know, they put Trump in power in 16, basically saying he's an illegitimate president. But what evidence do we even have, even to this day, that the Russians did anything? There's still none. It's just sort of taken as conventional wisdom.
Right. You know, I don't think they talked much about the cyber war. A little bit they did. But I think that's harder for me to get a hold of, because I don't know exactly how the operation works in it. But if the stories are true, this could be a very serious thing too. But it seems like The only way you're going to resolve that is by having a much friendlier relationship with as many people as you can, so that you can have a mutual agreement that on this equipment that we have access to what you're doing. You tell us what we're doing. Some type of an agreement. But right now, there's a lot of threats going on, and one threat is they do throw it at China. Mm-hmm. You know what they might do, and of course they've been throwing at Russia all along. But I don't think Russia decided the last election.
Yeah, the Chinese are guilty of all this industrial espionage, which may well be true, but the implication is that we never do that. We're never. Right. It's only those nasty Chinese. But I wanted to circle back to something you said earlier that was interesting, though. It seemed to me in the notes that I took when I was reading it, it seemed that Coates sort of destroyed Trump's diplomacy for North Korea. You know, when he said, you know, we don't believe that they're ever going to stop building this bomb. It kind of makes Trump look foolish because he's going ahead with his second summit. He's trying to use diplomacy, as you point out, and something we could actually agree with him on, with Trump on. And here comes Coates pouring cold water on it.
Yeah, and that's the toughest part of our job, I think, is because that same type of arrangement doesn't exist with Iran. You know, he's antagonistic there. He's not moving in the direction he wants to move in North Korea. But some of that comes from the fact that it's very, very sharp and very strong animosity. That was the beginning of the relationship, but that's part of Trump. I think he would admit that. You know, you do this, you get their attention, then they'll back off. You know, that's his strategy. But I think you're right. I think overall, even though we looked up for some positive points, I think overall this is a major attack on Trump, much more so than the report saying some things that we might agree with, because some of the things that we agree with might be that Trump wouldn't agree with us.
Yeah, and you know, what struck me as the most chilling part of this is when Coates was talking about how foreigners are using social media and media. Here's something that was from the report, from the Al Jazeera report. U.S. adversaries will use online influence operations to weaken democratic institutions, undermine alliances and partnerships, and shape policy outcomes. And so basically what he's saying is anyone questioning the U.S. global empire, it's not me and you questioning NATO, it's not a lot of people around us questioning our military everywhere. No, it's all driven by adversaries, U.S. adversaries. So anyone who speaks out against NATO, anyone who speaks out against, this trillion-dollar military budget, it's not that we're critical of it, we have a different view of what America should be. You're in the service of a foreign power. And that's going to have a chilling effect on the debate.
Well, I still see the problem, especially for me trying to define a position and explain it, is that when Trump says something like NATO, sort of falling along our lines, it's really not part of a entire philosophy for him, a policy. So it's a mixed bag, but it's just a shame that we can't move more people over and start with a basic principle. Why are we doing this? Where do we hit the moral authority to do this? Is everything done under constitutional authority? Is everything done with common sense? Are you endorsing the idea of trading with countries? No. It seems like we compound these things because we are interfering with trade. We have sanctions on there, and we're in the tariff war battles. And all this is exactly opposite of non-interventionism. It's sort of, what we've talked about before. It's sort of an isolationist viewpoint, and because we want to be out of NATO, like Trump says he wants to be, that doesn't mean we're isolationists. Yeah. And yet, if you're careless, that position will morph into more isolationism, you know. And isolation, of course, gets a bad word, and they think if you're not willing to go to war, you're an isolationist.
And the chilling thing about this is, if we do criticize these things, it's not that we have a different view, but it's that we're, as I said, in the pay of a foreign government. And what does that mean? If you're actually a foreign propagandist, there's going to be a war with people that are considered foreign propagandists, because it's going to be the assumption, why should you have First Amendment rights? You're not talking as an American. What you're doing is undermining America. So why should you have First Amendment rights? And you'll see on Twitter, you know, when someone says something criticizing the empire, someone will retweet it, one of the resistance types or the neocons, that's just the Kremlin line, you know, over and over, rather than debating the issue, should we get out of NATO, should we do this, that's what the Kremlin wants you to think. So it's quashing debate, and it's really an attack on the First Amendment.
Well, a good example of this is the spreading of democracy and the Constitution. Like, we're going to Venezuela, and we will spread democracy down here. We're going to kick one guy out, and we're putting in as president, and we're going to make him obey your Constitution. At the same time, all those activities are unconstitutional and probably illegal under international law, if you want to talk about that. We're down there doing that. And then we think, if we just say that we're doing the Lord's work, everybody's going to love America. And I think for a long time, you know, we had a lot of goodwill. But what we're witnessing now is the winding down of a little bit of a gift of goodwill, because I think our policies have become much more aggressive. And, you know, you could argue that world, our involvement in 1 and 2, even though it did lead to our more involvement, it wasn't as direct now. It is policy. I mean, it could be more direct than what's going on in Venezuela.
Yeah, and it's, in some ways, you sort of have to admire Bolton, because he's not fooling around with humanitarian. He just said, we're going to overthrow your government and take your oil. Full stop, you know. So at least he's sincere. Well, I would just, because I focus on this, Dr. Paul, I would close with another quote from Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence. And I found this also very, very chilling. Here's what he said. Russia's social media efforts will continue to focus on aggravating social and racial tensions, undermining trust in authorities, criticizing politicians perceived to be anti-Russia. You see where he's going. Don't criticize your government. Don't criticize these people. Don't question authority. If you do, you're in the service of Russia. That is definitely, folks, not what America is all about.
Very good. And I think we're certainly dealing with a mixed bag when it comes to sorting out our foreign policy, because we have the neocons, the basic principled neocons, if there is such a thing, who just believes that we should be doing much more of this. At the same time, we have the people in the media representing, really, I think, the bosses, the people who come in and give the directions to the people in government, because I don't believe these committees in Congress really run the show. I don't think the people are represented through the U.S. Congress, and that's sad, and it's terrible, and people will challenge me on that, but we really don't have representation, and it really is a challenge to people. Say, why do you do it? Why do you get involved? It doesn't work. Why do you vote? And it's a tougher question to answer, because my understanding, for me personally, is to get a message out and explain to people, challenge people, and see how many people we can go and get to endorse what we're doing. So, yes, Daniel and I don't believe that in the next year we're going to change the world, and the United States government is going to follow a non-interventionist policy, take the oath of office very seriously, and work on free trade. That's not going to happen. But I think the more people we talk to, and with our involvement in politics, that there have been more and more people who are starting to think about it. But it is being challenged, because we don't have the access to the young people that the media has, the ordinary media, as well as the social media, because they're not on our side. And the young people are right now, you know, thinking seriously, you know, it is a mess. We don't like it. And there are too many billionaires. And what we need is socialism. But it shouldn't diminish our enthusiasm, because what's happening is coming unglued. It's going to come apart. And we are going to face a crisis. And this country will have to make a decision of the proper role of government. I believe that motivated the founders of this country. What should the proper role of government be? So they leave the control of the British Empire. They write up a document trying to make that happen and show that the government is there to be very, very limited to protect liberty. So the goal shouldn't be difficult. The problems are very evident. But we have to refute the bad ideas of those who say we don't have enough government. We need more authoritarianism. The people don't know how to take care of themselves. That shouldn't be that difficult. But we have to first have a lot more people understand, believe in, be willing to defend the principles of liberty. I think that is the way to move toward a society of peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.